No more chant your all rhymes about Bull Robin Hood. His feats I do little admire. I'll sing the achievements of General Ludd, now the hero of Nottinghamshire. Brave Ludd was to measure of violence unused, till his sufferings became so severe, that at last to defend his own interests he roused, and for the great fight did prepare. The guilty may fear, but no vengeance he aims at the honest man's life or estate. His wrath is entirely confined to white frames and to those that all prices abate. Those engines of mischief were sentenced to die by unanimous vote of the trade. And Ludd, who can all opposition defy, was the grand executioner made. And when in the work he destruction employs, himself to no method confines. By fire and by water he gets them destroyed, for the elements aid his designs. Whether guarded by soldiers along the highway, or closely secured in a room, he shivers them up by night and by day, and nothing can soften their doom. He may censure great Ludd's disrespect for the laws, who ne'er for a moment reflect that foul imposition alone was the cause which produced these unhappy effects. Let the haughty, the humble no longer oppress, then shall Ludd sheathe his conquering sword. His grievances instantly meet with redress, then peace shall be quickly restored. Let the wise and the great lend their aid and advice, nor e'er their assistance withdraw, till full-fashioned work at the old-fashioned price is established by custom and law. Then the trade, when this arduous contest is all, shall raise in full splendor its head, and culting and cutting and squaring no more shall deprive honest workers of bread.
Now thanks to Chumbawamba for that, entitled The Triumph of General Ludd. Now our main speaker, speaking at the Sheffield Anarchists Book Fair, entitled The Luddites Organising Forum. Now they have a website, luddites200.org.uk. Now, if that strikes you as odd, it shouldn't do, because the Luddites weren't against technology. They were against technology which was hurtful to commonality, technology which damaged the common good, rather than the narrow interests of the few. So the fact, if you thought, Luddites' website doesn't match, no. It's because Luddism has been hijacked and misrepresented, slightly like the way, if you're a computer specialist, you might see yourself as a hacker. If you think, hacker, bad person, breaks in, steals passwords, well, there's still something of an ongoing discussion or debate on this. I consider myself a hacker, not because I break in and steal passwords, that's a relatively simple task. A hacker because I bend the rules and I use technologies in new ways. You can be a hacker without even using computers. But this meaning of hacking, getting round systems, making things creatively that weren't envisaged by those who provided the tools, that meaning of the word hacker has fairly much been sidelined in commercially motivated media, and they use hacker to be a bad guy who's breaking in, stealing passwords and damaging things, slightly in the way that Luddite has been labelled, somebody who hates technology. Well, as if to prove that I'm not a technology hater, I can reveal to you I've spent the last couple of months developing some new technology, which I hope will be helpful to commonality. In particular, I hope it will help tackle some of the obvious lies that I see on Wikipedia. If you are a regular listener to this show, you probably don't have to go much further than the Wikipedia account of the collapse of World Trade Center 7 to realize that some of the pages are a tissue of lies from beginning to end. Now, it says it's the free encyclopedia that everybody can edit, but not everybody is paid to edit Wikipedia and make it tell the story that corporate paymasters would like it to tell. And not everybody has rights to even go near Wikipedia, because some addresses have been banned for persistently putting up facts that the hierarchy didn't want you to know about. Just look at the revision history of the World Trade Center towers, for example. So, what this software does is pops up a bunch of buttons to look at alternative websites if they have material which matches the Wikipedia page you're looking at. So, you can go to Wikipedia, you can read it, and if there are dissenting voices, then it's easy for you to find that out. You don't have to go and mess around with search engines. The buttons just appear at the top of your browser. Now, that's the idea, and I hope you can see how that could be helpful to commonality, help to spread messages. Now, the software doesn't tell you which sites are of particular interest to you. That's up to you. You can change the default settings. I mention it at this stage mainly as an example of the fact that I'm not against technology, and this Luddites were not against technology as such, but they had a strong sense of what was just and felt that that was the appropriate way that they could try and bring about a more just world. So that's the idea. It's not a functional tool yet, so if you're an ordinary computer user, you probably don't need to go there. But if you're a computer scientist, or especially if you're a webmaster, if you have a website full of dissenting opinion, then I'd be very interested to hear from you and perhaps work with you to enable your site to receive traffic from the browser add-in. You can get in touch with me, unwelcome at unwelcomeguest.net, and you can take a look at the software at wikipediaplus.org. And now let's hear the talk. Many thanks to Chris for recording this and sending it my way. This is from May the 21st, 2011, the Luddites 200 Organizing Forum.
So I'm Michael, and I'm from the Luddite Anniversary Organizing Forum. And I'll just give you a little brief overview of, you know, a little bit about sort of history and the politics of technology and a little bit about what the organizing forum is hoping to do in that process. And then I just really want to get input from people, what people think that they would like to do and what types of issues today they think resonate in terms of contemporary political struggles that resonate with this Luddite struggle 200 years ago. So, I mean, just a brief history. Luddite as a word is actually, people generally say, oh, the Luddites are against technology. And in fact, the Luddites said we're opposed to machinery harmful to commonality. So there was at that time an enclosures movement where, you know, people who wanted to get rich just took the land, the common land where everybody used. They made it, they passed the law and says it's ours now. If you want to use it, you have to rent it or buy, you know. And then somebody was getting rich and poor people were getting poorer. This period of time was when they also pushed in factory machinery. So machinery came in the textile industry that could do the work of, you know, four or five weavers. And so suddenly they laid off the weavers. I mean, they could have said, great, you only have to work one day a week and you get paid twice as much. But instead, they used the machinery to say, six of you are unemployed and the rest of you have to work for lower wages because all of those people who are unemployed will come and take your job. So that was the, you know, the real sort of, the Luddites were fighting fierce poverty, and they tangibly were opposing the imposition of a market system that was made possible by the use of machinery and the Industrial Revolution. It's almost a completely forgotten anniversary. the parliament put more soldiers. They passed laws that said that the people who would be involved in the in frame breaking, so the machines were called frames, and were involved in breaking frames, would be hung by the neck. Capital punishment for this. And the parliament put in more soldiers in the Luddite Triangle than crossed the channel to fight Napoleon. So this is right at the tail end of the many years war with between France and England, and people are very impoverished, and they're imposing this factory system and making people more poor. And so it is chiefly that against machinery harmful to commonality has been lost in the history of the Luddites. In the 1950s, the Luddite word was reinvented or sort of mistold by the establishment. And they said, look, Luddites were against progress. Progress has to happen. There's only one progress. It's our progress. And we're the sort of, you know, the banking elites, the establishment elites, the engineering elites, the modern elites who are making the world what it is. And if you're against that progress, then you're, you know, against progress. You're a back to nature. You know, they just claimed that Ludditism was a form of ignorance, and that you couldn't be against progress. And in fact, progress has lots of directions. This progress in this direction, or this direction, or this direction. And here at an anarchist conference, people can say, "Well, we could definitely make some progress, but we're not sure it was in the same direction that the IMF, the World Trade Organization, Barclays Bank, and the Tory Party would like to see, you know, this country make progress in." And there's obviously lots of directions for progress. So another meaning of the word Luddite, very specifically relevant to today. Back around 2006, 2005, there was one of these World Economic Forum events.
Can you say the date
of it? It was a few years ago. I don't actually have the documentation.
I was talking about 1900s or
something. No. It was just a few years ago. But it was before 2008. It was in one of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, something like that. Mm-hmm. Person raises their hand to the speaker and says, "Well, I'm not sure. Don't you think this is highly dangerous? Like, can we run? You know, don't you think it's a house of cards to run our economy on, you know, a low interest debt fueled economy?" And the speaker rounded on them and called them a Luddite. "You don't believe in the economic progress that we have made to solve the boom and bust of capitalism." And, you know, by that definition of Luddite, the majority of Britain in 2008 suddenly became Luddites, because they suddenly didn't trust the banking system and their low-interest, you know, debt-fueled economy. So, you know, part of the goal of the Luddite Anniversary Organizing Forum is that we would reclaim the word and reclaim the histories and show that it was a fight about poverty, and it's incredibly relevant today, and that there's also machinery that is harmful to commonality today, as well as there's economic policies and parliamentarians that are harmful to commonality today. And so that fight is something that we want to bring back. This anniversary won't be celebrated by Parliament. It won't be... It's pretty much forgotten in many ways by even, say, you know, anarchism as a political tradition has been around for years. In sort of big revolutionary circles, the proper form of revolution was always considered Marxism for many people. And Marxism is actually very much was pro industrial progress. And I mean, I think there's debates about what type of industrial progress you want, or if you want industrial progress. But the issue is that should be a common decision rather than there is one direction of progress, and it is going to benefit, you know, particularly poor people. And as we see a lot of the machinery of, you know, the, you know, communist states was also equally exploitative of people, because you can't have a revolution without and go back to the same factory and just say, "Well, you work at the same wages and hours, but now we all own the factory. It's in our common interest." You know, so those are celebration is really up to a small category of people to sort of bring this back to life. The organizing forum is not a particular group or organization, it's just a group of people coming together to point out what is happening and trying to encourage people to organize things, to help and to pass out information so that people can really say, this is our rebellion, let's have it again. And I want to get people's feedback on what you think Sheffield and Huddersfield will be doing about things. And also in Huddersfield, you will get celebrations. And how will you bring out of those celebrations a message that is much more clearly like what the Luddites of them would sell, rather than, say, people like the little historian champagne tinkling thing saying, oh, this is an important part of our culture, and weren't they fools, those Luddites? That's a kind of a little bit of rough stuff. I looked at the blurb that I'm supposed to talk about, and it says I'm supposed to talk mostly about contemporary politics of technology, and I'm happy to do that. I'm also can talk a little bit about history. My experience in this country is, particularly in the radically educated circles, is that lots of people have lots of historical knowledge about the thing. I would, even a room this size, I'd be surprised if there weren't people who knew more about the Luddites than me. But I can certainly talk and tell a little bit of their history. And I can also talk about some of the contemporary politics of technology. And then I'd also like to have conversations with you about what you think is the technology today that most represents enclosure of the common value that is shared amongst people. And maybe, how do you think Sheffield and Huddersfield are planning to celebrate the Luddite anniversaries? Mm-hmm. So what's more important to most people? Talk about the history or talk about the contemporary politics?
Contemporary politics, as far as I'm concerned,
Yeah.
I mean, my mum's kind of brought me up on almost the history of the Luddite movement and that kind of thing.
Oh, great. So you probably know more. If I tell you, you'll be correcting me. Right? So, I've given a little bit of a summary of that. But it basically, in 1811, it started. So that's one of the things in November. And by 1813, it was more or less broken up. And they hung about 13 people in London. And there's a number of people that were shipped to Australia. And they managed to, to break the back of that rebellion. In terms of the actual technologies that we have today, I think there's a lot of ways in which people can think about the politics of technology. Obviously, the first one that people say is new technology. Oh, look at that. It's some new technology. What is it going to do? How is it going to change our lives? And obviously, whatever new technology creates a particular set of social relations. And, it's in some sense, people make technology, and people, the relationship between people is a social relationship. So technology is a social relationship, but the technology makes it durable, right? So if I give an example, in Israel and Palestine, there's a set of social relationships where many people feel that Israelis are exploiting the Palestinian situation. There's poverty that is going on there and racism. And if you build a huge, big wall, that makes that relationship in terms of that one set of people want to keep the other people on the other side of that wall, want to hold that, some people out of their thing. That's a social relationship, but the wall physically makes that durable. So this is one of the things that we think about when you think about technology, is how is it used to reinforce particular power for people? And that goes hand in hand with legislation. So if you say the internet is the great force of liberation, or is it a terrible thing? There's different forms of communication. There's one to many, where the great leader makes a speech to people, and there's many to many to one. Everybody writes a letter to the prime minister and says what they think. Or there's many to many. And generally, what happens is, people have been fairly carefully controlling many-to-many conversation for years. And, like, for example, with micro-powered radio or TV, small studios, you could have designed the internet levels of communication in the 1940s. But they chose not to do that. You know, there may be other trouble with the internet, and people have different opinions on these things. But this is an example of how it's not just the technology per se, it's how it's used, what kind of rules are passed with it, who's given it, and who isn't given it. Another form of technology politics, so if one is just a new technology, what does that technology do? Another form of technology is intellectual property. So politics of technology, intellectual property. In general, they pass patents and take things and say, this belongs to us. Largely, it's the sort of patenting right now means a few people own large amounts of technology. Oftentimes, it's the labor of researchers that is taken by companies that own the researchers. So you have companies and wealthy people who don't actually know what the patent does, but they own it, and they can use it on the stock market. They can deploy it in a new production. There's also intellectual property has been used in biotechnology, so that we now see patenting of crucial medicines, patenting of like organisms that could be considered to be alive, patenting of traditional medicine. So they take traditional medicine, they say, oh, they figure out, oh, that might be the active ingredient, they change something in it, and then they control that thing, and they say, we own this. But it's the actual labor that has been stolen or enclosed was the labor of people who did medicine work with traditional remedies for thousands of years and learned these types of plants in my neighborhood in South America are do this for me, and here's the type, so those types of intellectual property is being used to steal things. We also now see intellectual property on molecules. So with nanotechnology is the working of with matter at a very small level. Mm-hmm. And basic building blocks of matter, and they find new industrial processes to order to create them in particular ways, and they patent that, and they say, great. So in the future, if there's a particular way to make a particular metal that's useful in a particular thing in terms of building ecological buildings in the city, and the cheapest way to make that is this particular way with nanotechnology, somebody will own that. Mm-hmm. And so you only get access to it if they control that. So if Karl Marx said that capitalism is a social relationship, Luddites would also emphasize that social relationships are materially reinforced. I think capitalism is one particular way force that form of oppression and power that appropriates technology for and directs it in particular ways. Obviously, people in many ways appropriate technology and use it in their way. The whole cyberpunk movement and the free software movement to say, Microsoft, they're like stealing basic ability to use, writing and words. We're going to build an open, free software movement. We're going to learn how to use our own computers and technologies. That's people reappropriating technology, putting it for their use, and fighting. So there's many different ways to interpret, what a contemporary Luddite might be. I think there's many different contemporary strands and versions of Luddite, from people who of Earth First who say, look, we're going to, break down the roads, and so we don't want to build roads into this wilderness. And from people in, the cyberpunk movement who say, look, we're going to liberate our computers so that they are valuable as common entity for everybody and not just for Microsoft and big corporations. So let me think about telling you some other types, not just capitalism that is appropriating technology, not just people and working people that are reappropriating technology, making it used for them, but it's also other forms of power. For example, patriarchy, in terms of the oppression of women. It's a long-standing history that the original, for example, there's a history of the printing press. When they originally made the printing press, there's a piece called The Form. And it was more or less designed by men in the printing industry. They said, oh, we could make this machine that would do our printing work with us. And they basically, when they set the standard, they standardized it So it's about 50 pounds to lift the form, right? So sometimes men are stronger than women. Sometimes women are stronger than men. You can't make any generalizations, but there is an average strength differential. And on average, there's slightly more men that are stronger, physically more muscular. And so lifting 50 pounds. So they set that 50-pound weight right at about the average strength differential. So basically, you built a standard in the printing industry which would cut a lot of women out. So it didn't work all by itself because they also just used basic patriarchy. Hey, yeah, you're a girl, you can't do that. So if you could get rid of a few of the women by calling them a girl, and the others you can get rid of by saying, pointing to this and saying, like, it's you actually can't physically lift it, then that meant that men, more men were in the printing industry, and they were able to solidify that as some of the early first machinery that put men in control. Now, as the people started to be more savvy about how design processes and technology create power effects, some people get standardized in and some people get standardized out, then capitalism has taken a greater role in terms of making sure that particular people are stuck with, that the wage relations are one of the primary things that technology is used to control. But that's just an example that technology can have many different effects. And the point is not to be, say, let's get rid of technology, go back to Stone Age. That could be some people's idea. I'm perfectly open to people having those opinions. But the point is to say that technology has a particular set of politics, and at least three of those are: what does it do, these new technologies? Second is the intellectual property, and a third is standardization. If you set a particular standard, then that puts some people, standardizes them out, and some people that standardizes them in. So it creates a set of politics. And so you can see that in European Union right now. A lot of the meetings in the European Union are these boring meetings about widgets. They are standardization meetings. You know, all these big arguments about how the standard for the video, you know, and the television, digital TV, those are all, you know, boring technical arguments, but some people will be standardized out and some people will be standardized in by those. And in fact, the standards that we set today create the politics that are possible and impossible tomorrow. So I can talk a little bit about biotechnology, nanotechnology, synthetic biotechnology, geoengineering. You know, these are some of the particular technologies that are there. But what I'd like to do is stop right now and get a little chance for people to have some comments on more or less anything about what you think in terms of the politics of technology today, how you think a Luddite anniversary should be celebrated. Should we talk more about the history? Should we talk more about the contemporary issues? Should we have historical, celebrations, or should we have armed insurrections and uprisings? What is it that will bring that out, and how important is it? Where should we take the politics of this? And also, people's opinions on particular types of technology and when technology isn't political. So, I mean, we can go around in a circle, or we could just have people raise their hand if they like.
Yeah, I mean, in European Union, there's the bill going through to standardise all the herbal products.
Yeah.
So there's so many small-scale manufacturers of those herbal remedies that are going to be have to try and meet standards that they can't possibly meet because of the way they're made.
Yeah. And particularly when they become competition for somebody else who is a drug producer, then those rules will be enforced. If it's just some little person on the street, then no one will think. But when they become actual competition, the rules will be enforced. And so you see there is a combination of scientific laws, the legislation, and all this being used to impose market forces and really take away common herbs from people that people have been using for thousands of years.
Well, when people say the word Luddite, you might think of these things as technologically backward. Mm-hmm. I think backward is a kind of word that would pop into people's heads when they saw Luddite. But, as far as I'm concerned, capitalism is backward. It produces, you know, not for any purpose, just to make money. And it seems that Earth, through moving the production of food especially, as far away from the consumers as possible. And, yeah. Well, that's a tool to keep keep people in place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my solution word to that would be to completely decentralize the production of food.
Right.
From mass industrial farming to...
So are any of the people who read late that I have this magazine, The Land, which got a special issue on the Luddites. It's part of the many things that are kind of starting to pop out of the woodworks. And it is all about decentralizing production and going back to the land. So if you focus on land, then you can't really focus on this sort of market economy that is, because you can't really, there's only so much land, so then you have to figure out how to use it. Whereas there's infinite numbers of useless products that can be sold and resold. And so.
I think there are an awful lot of things that are being made that don't need to, because we've got enough, or we've got too many as it is.
On the history, there were a letter appeared in our local paper after 26th of March, pointing out that in 1811 people went out around our area, blacked their faces up and smashed up mill machinery. In 1911, young women went round setting fire to government buildings and smashing windows. And of course in 2011, we have the people smashing banks up in central London and things like that. But I think one of the things to remember about Luddites is, and they're always remembered for this thing of smashing machinery. Of course, they smashed machinery because it was the machinery that were destroying their livelihoods of in their own homes with their own families or a small group of people making their own cloth, and they could work when they wanted, and they could work 4 days solid, make a load of cloth, have days off when they wanted to have days off, and they were independent. And that would all been destroyed by a factory system that meant you clocked on at 6 and you clocked off at 6 at evening and your life were wrecked, basically. But also, the thing about Luddites is that's forgotten is it came at the back end of the French Revolution, where there were lots of Republican organisations and Republican clubs and United Englishmen operating all over the country, in effect. So, as well as the smashing of machinery, they have these ideas of democracy and republicanism. So, I don't think it's something well worth celebrating. I think it's Diamond Jubilee next year as well. So, in effect, we've got counterparts, and they've got their Jubilee. Especially in certain areas, we've got the Luddites, who of course were partially at least involved in the Republican movement. So, but I think the thing about technology is, you see, a Luddite is quite often sort of like used as a term of insult against people wanting to get into technology or control technology or hold technology or raise questions about technology that capitalism wants to use to make a profit. But it's capitalism that destroys things as well. Manufacturing industry have destroyed it. Railways in this country have destroyed it. If something doesn't make a profit or stops making a profit, they will destroy it, including people's jobs and livelihoods. So I suppose that's an analogy from 1811 that's as true today as well.
I think the thing that interests me about thinking about 1811, how these factories got to the state that they were in, why did people go from the cottage industries or the little sort of trades stuff that was obviously going on and working for the majority of people, how did it go from that to everyone kind of, if you set up a factory and they went, right, come and work for me, who would go? Do you know what I mean? No one would go, but it must have been such a mass thing, it must have been completely taken as read that was what was happening, and that was progress, like you were saying about what progress is, but that must have been quite a lot of how they got to that state where there were factories everywhere, there were things going on to make money everywhere. It wasn't just like one person's idea. Does everyone want to go and start an apple stay in my village, thank you? So it's like that interests me about what we see now, about the sort of the mass sort of mass marketing of stuff, and it only works because the majority of people are actually into it. They're actually doing it. You know, like, that's what's happening. You know, like, a lot of people are into mainstream media, mainstream la-di-da. That's the reality of sort of why how capitalism can exist as it is, how consumerism exists like it is. It's not just one sort of idea, it's a whole, like, knitted up of lots of things. So I'm interested how that, yeah, I don't know, how, like, the kind of counterculture stuff or people who think outside of that box, yeah, they're obviously going to be treated like Luddite. Luddite is a really interesting word because people, it's become an insult. I don't think of it as an insult, but the majority of people think of it as an insult. But because it's something different, it's something outside of that mainstream thing, I think.
That reminds me of something that I heard. How you said that, you know, they wanted to remain autonomous and they didn't want to go to factories, but then it seems as if there were so many factories coming up that autonomy became impossible, because it seems to me that autonomy is frowned upon and by the state laws as well, because a friend who runs an animal sanctuary farm, he wanted to grow his own vegetables just for himself, but he had to inform the council about it, and the council said, well, if you're going to grow the vegetables to sell, you can buy a license for £50, but if you're going to grow the vegetables just for yourself, you'll have to buy it for £700. So in order to be autonomous and just have the vegetables for himself, you'd have to pay a lot more just for a license to do that. So it seems like autonomy is really frowned upon by the state, and it's not encouraged. It seems to me like the Luddites really wanted to hold on to their autonomy, and we've kind of starting to forget what autonomy is these days. And those of us who want to clamber back to it, it seems as if you need to sacrifice an awful lot, and it's quite a scary, daunting thing, and you're not really sure how to do it, how to teach each other how to do it, and where to find the opportunities to get land, or how to do it, really.
Yeah, and there's a whole set of skills to get wiped out when your grandmother dies.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, how do we pickle these things? I always had this when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, those type of skills, whereas, my grandmother has an incredible range of skills that she does, and she doesn't have a university education and stuff, and all that, and it's quite a good thing to look at. As a remark to what you were saying, is like, why did people go to those factories? I do think there was a sort of encroachment slowly happening, but also at that time, if you were home, if you didn't have a job, you were destitute. So people had to work. It really was, they had some way to work.
But I just mean that if what was happening before industrialization was that people were getting along by trading between themselves or getting them working, you know, there was a lot of work that was based on tradey type stuff. It's not like capitalism just kind of arrived. Like, people did use money a long time ago, am I right? A lot before, 200 years ago.
There's a different kind of, you know, there's capitalism and there's capitalism.
Yeah, that's what
capitalism, nihilism, and capitalism. Yeah. You see what showed up after that.
You have something as a unit of exchange, of course.
Yeah.
And on another level, you know, that makes sense. It's when you get a different kind of capitalism, which exists on a level that's so far removed from people's day-to-day existence that it warps, it almost like warps reality to the point where it's detached, it's not.
So you have advanced technology in 1780s and 90s, you have development of spinning mule, spinning jenny, cropping frames that were technological. So you'd go to market having made your own cloth on your hand loom in your house, and you try selling your cloth, but you've got someone who had the capital to invest in X amount of shearing frames who could undercut you and sell it cheaper. So no merchant were going to buy your cloth because their cloth were cheaper, so you went out of business. So in order to feed your family, you and invariably your kids as well, had to go and work at mill.
Yeah.
That's how they forced people into wage slavery
the mill system. And all the horrors of industrialisation as well. Kids work in bad conditions. I mean, another historical thing that's well remembered, certainly at Labour movement in Huddersfield, is that just after the Luddite period in 1818, there was a mill fire where there were 17 and 18 kids killed in a mill because they couldn't get out because they were locked in. So you go to the mill at 6 o'clock in the morning and you'd be locked in. I mean, there were cases of people being chained to machinery, so they couldn't put them out and things like that. Absolutely horrendous circumstances that capitalism imposed on people. Rather surprising, people took quite extreme measures to resist it, really well.
Yeah, and that word capitalism is a bit of an abstract word. It was actually actual people who owned those factories and chained them, managers, and there was people who did that. Some people did that to other people.
Yeah, distinctly. Yeah.
I think that's maybe where I'm trying to get to. Like, how did it become that people were like, this is better than working for yourself. I'm going to get people to work for me. I'm going to get so many people to work for me that I don't care who comes and goes, and I don't care how poor they are, and all that sort of stuff that is, like, getting worse and worse now, obviously, it's carrying on. Yeah, like you say, it's absolutely, it's people that have made those choices, and I think that's really interesting what you say about technology and different industries that support the sort of the social stuff that's going on and the interrelations between people, because I'm constantly fascinated, why does anybody need power over and all this kind of stuff that goes on? Yeah, like, how does that become and yeah, I think most people would agree that the Luddite movement at the time was really, like, it was challenging so many of those things, like, you can't do that to me, that sort of thing. It's like, it's really powerful stuff.
Yeah, we're not having it. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's what I'm interested in why I came, because it's quite interesting thinking about what, yeah, how people think about Luddites, but also what it means to, I don't know, to sort of think outside of just smashing things up or something. What's, if you're not just in the factory, what are you?
So I'll just make a few comments on some of the contemporary technologies that people have been concerned with. One, just to start with, for example, computers may be very useful to people, you know, individually. One of their uses they have been put to by employers is in the 1970s, people were out on strikes, there was problems with the oils, and the whole way of production, you know, kind of slowed down, and they weren't making very much money. So at that point, you know, if you had one of the ways that if you were a business person, you got competitive advantage, is you built everything in the same place. So if you're Henry Ford has an automobile factory, he brings all the material to one place, and it's this Fordist mass production. Well, after that kind of Fordist mass production, one of the things that happened from the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, and now, is this way in which you have an information economy. So if you take out your mobile phone, it's the exact opposite of a Henry Ford pickup truck, which is all made in one place. Your mobile phone, like, chip was made in this country in Southeast Asia, the plastic was done in Germany, the marketing was done in New York, the finance was done here, this chip was done over here, the plastic, you know, the assembly was done here, the packaging was written, and the instructions, and the, you know, so it's all the places that were most cheap so they could source that. And so what that meant is an incredibly sort of flexible economy, but it hasn't been very flexible for people. It's been flexible for employers, and they've been able to downsize wages by shipping jobs abroad. So there is an example of market forces being imposed. They use technology to do it. I wouldn't necessarily advocate going smashing all computers per se, but I would say that that is the using that sort of mass capital transfer and that type of technology has not been beneficial to us. So that's one example. And as you see that most recently, to take the Ford example quite literally, is like there's several places in the past year where in the late 90s, Ford had a bunch of factories, and they shifted those factories to calling it outsourced it, called it Visteon, and they made parts for Ford cars. It was basically Ford, but they got a different name, and they were supposed to get their same pensions, And when that when they and then at a certain point, then the right now they shipped the jobs to other places and they've canceled the workers' contracts, and that ended up in a factory occupation in Ireland and in Britain. So that's an example of imposition of market forces, and all those people are not necessarily going to get their pensions now. They're fighting to get their pensions that have been stolen from them. I think there's lots of people have seen the biotechnology issue, the genetic technologies. That's basically, they're not really particularly proven to be safe. They don't have that many advantages, but one of the real things that GM technology does is it is patentable, so somebody can own it. So, and if you can mass produce mass agriculture, so there's huge swaths of places in South America where the villages have been destroyed because they put the pesticide, they breed the soy and the pesticide, so the soya is resistant to the pesticide. It's genetically modified to be resistant. Then they put more pesticide, kills everything else, and then the soya is still there. But it kills the people who live in the villages. It kills the ecosystem. So those are examples from biotechnology. Nanotechnology I talked to you a little bit about, but basically, you know how people get microscopes and then they get micro-microscopes and micro-microscopes. So they got to be so they could see pretty small, and they figured, how could we start moving these things around, these molecules around? And some of the microscopes are called electron microscopes, and those type of electron scanning tunneling microscopes and electron force microscopes that can actually look at the small level, and they actually move. When they look, they touch things by looking at them, and they move them. It's so small that if you look at it, it moves. And they figured out how to get these things to move. And so they can now manipulate molecules. And they don't know what they're doing. It's wildly dangerous because humans in nature have grown up with a whole set of molecules that are in a standard pattern. It may be pretty different, but you know, in millions of years, you start to evolve to what's there. Now they're creating whole new ways in which molecules. So, like, for example, gold is the color gold, but if you put it at a very tiny, small particle, it's green, like little tiny. So it's in the same way that if I drop a concrete block on your head, you will feel it will be bad for you. If I drop the same weight of concrete, but it's in sand, you won't like it, but it'll get you dusty. But it's so two different size particles have different effects. At the molecular level, it's hugely different effects, the sort of nanochemistry. So basically, it's a whole new set of chemistry. We worked on a campaign, me personally, on nanosilver in the water supply, because there's all these products. Nanosilver kills germs because there's such a small size to the surface area ratio. It's massively thing, and they put that in the water supply. You don't know what's going to happen. So there's whole new chemicals. And silver is not regulated differently as nanosilver and silver. So, you know, it was perfectly legal to things. And so those are issues that are going on. You had a comment, question?
Yeah, the way you just described that, it was, well, you made it sound very much like alchemy. I'm kind of forced to wonder if there isn't just a certain limit beyond which humans shouldn't f*** out with things. I feel part of me not putting too fine a point on it.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but I won't make any comments on the limits of investigation, but I will make some comments on the limits of profit-making without safety investigation. Yeah. Like, that's what's happening. They figure out how they can make money on these things. So nanotechnology is considered the way to have competitive advantage. So a business person says, with nanotechnology, I can mass-produce something cheaper, faster, better, does something different than somebody else. So they all want it. Nobody knows what the long-term consequences of introducing a whole new set of chemicals, you know, doubling the amount of chemicals in the world and with no regulation on that. Mm-hmm. Synthetic biotechnology, has anyone heard of this stuff? Mm-hmm. So it's like GM, but like instead of transgenics where they take one gene, like they were gene from an Arctic fish that, you know, and put it in a tomato. That's transgenic. Synthetic biotechnology is when they take all of the genes and they artificially make them. So basically they kind of map the genes and then they make the whole, and they guess, oh, this does this, this does this. And then they can try and guess how to make stuff. And they do the whole thing. And then they're claiming, they're like, well, we're building organisms from the ground up. These one-celled microorganisms that was done last year, this fellow Craig Venter. I mean, basically, this microorganism has developed over billions of years, and he's copied it and changed something, and he claims he's a God-creating being, you know, like a God creating life. But, like, the issue is that basically microorganisms, they eat and they excrete, and that's called their metabolic pathway. And they want to re-engineer the metabolic pathway of one-celled microorganisms so they can eat waste products and excrete things like petroleum or paint thinner, you know, chemical industry. They want to turn bugs into factories that make chemicals, and particularly petroleum. There's tons of money. The oil industry is investing in biotechnology. So nobody in agriculture ever looked at biotech and said, well, that's a good idea. But like the pesticide industry looked at biotech and said, that's a great idea. We find a way to sell our pesticides. And that's the only reason biotech has started. So now the chemicals industry wants to go in and use life to create chemicals. And it basically means solving energy production. So one, it might not ever work, could be dangerous. If it does work, guess who owns it? Not you. It's mainly oil companies and centralizing the power. It's those types of people. It's BP is a huge investor in this type of stuff. So these are the types of things with synthetic biotechnology is. Geoengineering, have you heard this? Geoengineering is the idea that we can mass engineer the ecosystem of the Earth. Is this possible? Well, obviously, it is accidentally possible. Since the Industrial Revolution, we put so much coal dust in the air, and we put so much burnt so many fossil fuels since the petroleum industry that the carbon cycle of the planet is coming out of hinge, and some people are making money on capitalist production, and other people are actually realizing that it's changing the temperature of the planet. And the poorest of the poor in the world, and places like Africa, and places that are victims to flash floods and stuff are going to get killed right away, and the rest of us are going to have to suffer slowly, while the wealthy people kind of slowly decide whether or not they really want to lose the money that it takes to change things to back to an ecosystem. So geoengineering is one of their answers, like, let's just re-engineer the planet so it will be, you know, back to the same, you know, the old thing. And so that is, there's all kinds of ideas, like artificial volcanoes. We just put massive levels of sulfite up in the air. You black out the sky, it'll dim the planet. Changing the chemistry of the oceans to create plankton blooms. You know, put like lots of sulfate, iron
filings.
It's
iron filings, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Because they did an experiment illegally. It was illegal to do this geoengineering experiments in the ocean, according to a UN convention, fortunately. And they went and did one anyways. They dumped a lot of iron filings in the ocean. And you get a massive plankton bloom. And it's supposed to take up more of the thing. Or obviously, ideas like synthetic biotechnology would be part of their geoengineering imagination. So, you know, taking the whole planet that you live with and turning it into an experiment. And then hopefully it won't go terribly sour, you know? There's experiments where they have a bad day at your lab and the test tube blows up and like, gosh, I thought that would work differently, you know? And you're doing that with your whole planet. So those are, and that's just basically because there is an easy solution to the climate crisis. We could look at, you know, small-scale subsistence-level agriculture and people controlling, having autonomy in their own lives, controlling land and working together with solidarity. You know, two basic principles, solidarity and autonomy, and moving to a sustainable economy. Of course, it's very hard to exploit other people and make massive amounts of money and hold, you know, control over the global systems. So that's why many of these people don't want to do that.
I was just going to say I'm interested in the... how the pesticide thing is sort of related to sort of chemical warfare and things like that, and how...
Yeah, the biotechnology, synthetic biotechnology is a huge danger in chemical warfare.
Yeah.
Like the price of recreating a smallpox virus is about roughly, if you have access to the thing, is the price of like buying a BMW. Right? So how many wildly racist people do you know that could afford a BMW? And figure out and try to experiment with that. So, I mean, these are kind of real dangers that went in. Mm-hmm. So, I would like you... So, basically, when they passed the laws for the Luddites again to hang them, people got a bit concerned that if I'm involved in this, I better be involved in this for good with other people. So, it was a tradition in many of these insurrections just to take an oath So I'm going to give you the oath. And the bit where it says I, you say your own name and you repeat after me. So we'll swear you all in. And these are actual oaths that were taken. So raise your hand if you want to be sworn in with the Luddites. I, Michael.
Nancy.
Of my own voluntary will, do declare and solemnly swear. That I never will reveal to any person or persons under the canopy of heaven. The names of the persons who comprise this secret committee, their proceedings, meetings, places of abode, dress, features, connections. Or anything else that might lead to a discovery of the same, either by word or deed or sign. Under the penalty of being sent out of the world by the first brother who shall meet me. Or sister. And my name and character blotted out of existence and never to be remembered. But with contempt and abhorrence. And I further do swear that I will use my best endeavors to punish by death any traitor or traitors should any rise up amongst us. Wherever I can find him or them, and though he shall fly to the verge of nature, I will pursue him with increasing vengeance. So help me God and bless me to keep this my oath inviolable. Okay, so as you can see, they were quite concerned. And there's a lot of rhetoric about class war, you know, war. What we have is a class conflict, and the Luddites were in a class war.
And I hope this show has encouraged you to pour sand in the gearbox of the despotic machines near you, whether that's literal or metaphorical. If you'd like to take part in organized activity against technology harmful to commonality, you can contact their website at luddites200.org.uk, and I'm sure they'd be glad to hear from you. I'd be glad to hear from you if you know of a website full of useful and Wikipedia unwelcome information. Do get in touch. I might be interested to fit that out for Wikipedia Plus. This and all previous episodes of Unwelcome Guests are available for download as MP3s from unwelcomeguests.net/archive. There's a mailing list at altruists.org/unwelcome for any discussion relevant to the show. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening. Keep giving all you can.